And welcome back to Coast. John Hogue with us in a moment. I thought it'd be time to bring John back. You know, he's an expert on Nostradamus. He's an expert on his own prophecy. He has, by the way, predicted the last 12 winners of every U.S. presidential election by the popular vote since 1968. So we've got lots to talk with him about, and we'll get right into it in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I just have a great time every time we have John Hogue on the program. I mean, he brings incredible insight about current events, incredible insight about future events, and I think he's one of the best. John, always a pleasure, my friend. How are you?
Well, I'm feeling pretty good, though. For the first time in my prophecy career, I've made a string of predictions related to my favorite football team that... All the witnesses in my little village up here in the Pacific Northwest know that I actually got them all right. The Seattle Seahawks, I saw in September, were going all the way. And today we had this gigantic celebration, 700,000 people.
A huge parade, wasn't it?
More people than Seattle actually has in its central area living there. And I gazed at it fondly from my little island north of the city in the Puget Sound.
Well, that's good. Did you expect the wind to be so overwhelming?
Yes, I had said that morning to some friends and a fellow writer friend of mine, who we are both refugees, L.A. Rams fans from growing up in L.A. and never seeing our Rams ever win a Super Bowl. We watched the thing together. He's a fellow writing friend of mine. J.R. Rain, and we kind of looked in wonder at finally we live with a city that actually has a Super Bowl champion. And, you know, a lot of you in the East Coast probably don't have that much of a problem with that, but we in the West Coast, we rarely, I mean, Joe Montana and the San Francisco 49ers is the last time you ever saw a dynasty happening from the West Coast.
And your Rams, of course, moved to St. Louis, and there are some rumors they might move back to Los Angeles.
Oh, wouldn't that be strange?
My goodness.
Well, it's the fifth largest TV market for football. I always like to think that there'll be a new expansion team. It'll be called the LA Sharks.
Yeah.
You heard it here.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Or the LA Drought if it keeps up.
Huh? Yes, the LA Desiccators.
Yeah. We did a little mind consciousness experiment last week, John, to get it to rain, and I got to tell you, a day and a half later, it poured in Los Angeles.
Well, you know where it's needed is up in the Owens Valley and the Sierras. Actually, the drought situation in L.A., though bad, is it's semi-arid anyway. And since most of the water comes from where the drought's really at its worst in central and northern California, pray again, this time see a lot of snow in the Sierras.
You're always writing something new, an ebook or something. What's new with you?
Well, I am converting a lot of my books into the e-tablet or the tablet reader format. It took me about 2 years to get them all over, and also making a number of books. I plan to write, I've written predictions for 2014, which I did bring in as promised on the New Year's. Fortunately for me, since often my deadlines are a little late, I had to skip the solar and I got the Lunar New Year. It came out on the 31st of the Year of the Horse in Chinese astrology. But I have another 7 books coming out. Several of them are refreshed and re-edited, like The Last Pope and Nostradamus and the Antichrist. And then I have a whole string of other books that are going to come out that are new. And so I'm a writing machine these days.
Good for you. Well, let's get right into it. Mr. Hogue, what's 2014 look for us?
It looks a lot like 1914 in the essence of things, not in the surface. It's the same ocean of history bursting. In fact, I call it, if you look back at our modern times, if you want to know a point where the catalyst for everything that we know of in our cascading, upheaval-filled, fascinating and fast-paced modern times started, it started in August 1914, the Guns of August, which launched the First World War. In 4 short years, situations, iconic political systems, social systems, which had sustained the world, the monarchical empires and colonial empires that were Eurocentric, that basically dominated the planet for 500 years, some cases 1,000 years, if you. In 4 years, they were gone. Most of them were gone, and the survivors, like the British Empire, were mortally wounded and on their way out. Everything changed dramatically, and from those changes in those 4 years came the Russian Revolution, then the National Socialist Revolution, the fascists, all these things, perpetuating from World War II into the Cold War, which leads us to now. All of that is basically a travail of 100 years from basically in 1914, history's water broke and gave birth in travail to, or tried to give birth to, a new era. I say in the book, Predictions for 2014, that that era kind of came out stillborn. So we are now 100 years later in 2014. I contend we are about to see 1914 repeated, in essence being that the things that we have grown to assume will always be there, the way we pay for our bills, the way we do our politics, the way we have power grids politically and energetically that control, centralize our world, the way we had a stable climate, all of this in the next 4 years, starting with this new year, is going to be upended.
Yeah.
Economy is not going to be, in 4 years' time, you will not recognize the economic systems. Or what you'll find is the old systems will be struggling and faltering, crashing even, as new systems come to crowd them out. This is the same with another thing is a huge change is our focus from being a more centralized world with central banks, central power grids, central politics, is going to actually go into what I call a decentralizing revolution, which I can go into detail later about. But just fundamentally, what is similar about 1914 and 2014 is the everything set on its ear quality. There's not going to be a third world war. There's not going to, but there is definitely a war that I call in the book World War Stupid. And that's basically,
explain that, John.
Well, basically, World War Stupid is our human, our ultimate enemy is our inability to adapt and use our intelligence to solve our problems. It's no one's fault, really. It's just the way societies have habitually grown, and when people are born into them, they have to survive, adopt the conditioning of whatever society they're in. And East, West, Native, doesn't matter. What people end up having is a lot of seeded pathological behaviors that in the collective create our miserably predictable future. That situation, we've been talking about this for years, is how we're reaching a singularity, a critical mass of stupid, where the sustainability of these habits, as our world goes global, as we become more crowded with people and demanding more, demanding as much as 4 Earths worth of resources to the 1 Earth we only have in this area of space, all these things are creating a point where if we don't change that and become more intelligent about how we use our resources, how we live with each other in our world, we are going to tripwire a whole number of collective predictions that have been around since ancient times, that have foreseen the rising of the oceans, foreseen the potential of ice ages or a cascading global warming. Either way, a climatological disaster that we create that causes, as Nostradamus famously and infamously described, vast global famines, which could actually see people revert to cannibalism and kill 2 out of every 3 of us. So, this is the potential future that we're creating because of stupid. Stupid is the enemy. And stupid is a hard enemy to fight because stupid always hides behind the conceit of us not being stupid, that our glorious nations and our fearless leaders and our imaginary friends that we worship are somehow going to fix this mess for us rather than find out that this atomically small person called the human individual is actually empowered with the ability to see stupid and transcend it through what I would say the practice of the science of self-observation, meditation. In my 30 years of studying prophecy, I have tried to find the source of our miseries that are repeated, seeing fully and clearly that we're soon coming, starting this year, to have to confront the breakdown of our world because of stupid, and also find a way, a scientific way, since we're entering the Aquarian Age, which is an age of science, not an age of blind faith, a scientific way to look at the subjective human being and how he ticks or she ticks, as well as the phenomenal world. And what I contend is meditation helps people break those habits, those bad habits that are seeded into us by our societies, so that we can kind of wake up from stupid and look at ways to really solve our problems and interact with each other in a whole new and creative way.
Now, when you say 2014 into the next at least 4 years, can anything be done to make things change, or is it set in stone?
There is nothing set in stone. That is my experience of about the future. Classic example of that is that many of the greatest prophets like Nostradamus from the 16th century clearly gives either or future tracks. There's a number of his prophecies that look like they're going somewhere, but they don't actually pay off because we made a different choice. For the simple reason of this is that he was made famous by a prediction he made about the king dying in a jousting accident. It was such a famous prophecy that he was summoned to court to explain himself. Had to travel 650 miles by mule all the way from Salon-Provence in the southern part of France to Paris. He had this meeting. Right? It's not known exactly what he said in the meeting, but he came out of it an honored man, and I imagine he probably talked about what he'd already published, that he had a series of prophecies about the king being a great uniter of Protestants and Catholics and preventing the civil war that he foresaw over religion, or he would die in a jousting accident. Well, he died several years later in a jousting accident. And it was that death, which was Nostradamus' Jean Dixon moment, where she predicted Kennedy's assassination, mm-hmm. death before it happened, years before it happened, documented it.
Did she tell him that?
She tried.
Yeah.
She tried, actually, just before, in November, she tried desperately to get a note to the White House, to him. You know, she was it's later become known that she was a private confidant of a number of presidents, starting from Roosevelt and Kennedy's, and also especially Richard Nixon listened to her quite a lot.
So she had direct access to these people.
She did. She was a bit of a, like Nostradamus had access to the royalty of France and became the talk of the courts of Europe. As my book, which is actually the first full-body biography on Nostradamus ever written, Nostradamus, A Life and Myth, which I just released in Kindle e-tablet, on the 23rd of December, which would be the 510th anniversary of his birth. And in it is this whole amazing story about how he was Jean Dixon on steroids. He made a number of predictions in his time that got the ear of the courts of Europe, but also got him in a lot of trouble with the church justices and the masses of people who wanted him burned. It's you can be the national idiot if you make silly prophecies like Jean Dixon made in the National Enquirer and other stuff. But you can also, she also made predictions that were documented, like in Parade magazine in 1956, which started this whole evolution of her predictions about John Kennedy being elected in 1960 and then dying in office. These prophecies, fortunately, she did not incur the ire that is the no good deed goes unpunished when you're a successful prophet. People get scared of you. And I mean, I was blacklisted from Fox after 9/11 from any Fox network show.
And really?
Recently. Yeah, I found out I was blacklisted because I did a show called of the Millennium. Yeah, Predictions of the Millennium. It came out, I did it in November of 1995, And it came out nationally on Fox Network in 1996, I think around March. And it was rerun again on FX Channel. It's a Fox affiliate all across the country 2 weeks before 9/11. And what a number of us did of different traditions of fringe like mine are more scientific and security oriented. We were all kind of asked the question, will the 1993 attack on the Twin Towers be tried again by terrorists, and will they succeed? And basically, I had said in that they would succeed taking down the towers, and there would be and they even did a special effect where they showed an explosion in the air taking down the two towers, which is in the documentary. And then I went on to write, and I've documented this, a number of attempts to evolve an interpretation of Nostradamus' famous prophecies about the great king of terror descending from the sky, the hollow mountains collapsing. And in those, I talk about it and documented that in 1997 that I thought that it could happen around 1999, but no later than 2001. Unfortunately, it did happen. So, you know, to those people like Penn Jillette, who gets on with the mute teller on Nostradamus 500 years later and basically says if anybody had known that this was coming, any of these Nostradamus scholars, and kept it private and didn't tell anybody, that they're criminals and they should go to jail. So many words like that. I'm going to actually write one of the books I'm writing is going to answer
pretty blunt
his claim. Oh, it's not only blunt, but it's unprofessionally researched, because I'm going to show in a book how many people had premonitions documented of this thing coming. I've been putting together this material for years, and it's going to come out in a book later this year that's going to look at those of us who did warn people this was coming, and we were ignored, or just considered silly. And this is always the problem with prophecy. Prophets like Nostradamus become famous not because they were successful, but because they were unsuccessful in changing the future.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit about the death of Ariel Sharon, the former prime minister of Israel. That some people, John, say that death is tied into prophecy.
Well, it's an interesting process. My contacts in Israel, it's interesting to note that when he had his stroke, was just after the Gaza Strip settlements had been evacuated of Israeli Jewish citizens. And many of the prophecy watchers I am in contact with believed that this was a sign that of punishment, that because this is land that belongs to the promised land in the Bible, in the Old Testament, as the Christians call it. And so there has been a thread of interpretation, whether it is true or not, I don't know, but the interpretation that it was some kind of divine punishment that he had a stroke. I would say more practically is because he ate too much and was obesely overweight and had a stroke. Not divine hand of God, but too much steak.
Too much.
But still, there is a number of things. And in the last few almanacs that I do every year, like predictions for 2014, like what I did in 2013 and others, the issue of Israel coming to terms with what I call the Samson option.
Hold on right there, John. We'll come back and talk about that and so much more. Predictions with John Hogue on Coast to Coast AM. And if you want to take a look at some of the past programs on the television program Beyond Belief, you can do that 10 days free to just peruse and take a look at all the great things there. And you'll even be able to see things that John Hogue does. Simply go to this website, beyondbelief.com, fill out the information, beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast. Now, those of you who might not be aware of the character Samson from the Bible, he was the one who had incredible strength, but lost it when they cut off the locks of his hair, Samson and Delilah, right? But it grew back while he was being captured. Samson, who pushed apart the pillars of a Philistine temple, brought down the roof, killed himself and thousands of other Philistines. And that, John Hogue, is what you call the Samson option, isn't it?
Yes, the Samson option is also called by Israeli military the final solution of, if you will, of being attacked by all sides and losing a war and then unleashing the nuclear arsenal that Israel possesses on their enemies. There would be a number of people who would look at the Old and New Testament with the fires coming down from the skies and turning the enemies of Israel to ash as signs of some thermonuclear last attack if Israel was falling or for a last chance to survive. I have been evolving interpretations of a number of Nostradamus' prophecies since 2007, looking at how Israel may be facing a very dangerous misinterpretation of biblical prophecies and actual emergent threats as somewhat of a overreaction to a trauma that happened because of the Holocaust in World War II. It is the Israeli leadership, and I must stress that this is not a view held by a lot of Israelis, but the Israeli, about over half the country does not have this view that Iran is an imminent threat. But the Israeli leadership, especially Netanyahu, the prime minister, is completely locked into this idea that he must save his country in a Churchill-esque preemption, forewarning the danger of a new Hitler or a new set of Aryans, the Aryans of Iran, who are going to conspire to create a nuclear weapon and attack Israel. So they must be preempted. And right as we speak, there are negotiations and work going on between Saudi Arabians and the Israelis to create a window for them to attack over Saudi airspace into Iran, which could happen as soon as April and May of this year or October and November of this year.
Why do the Saudis, John, who in there's no doubt that a lot of the rich Saudis have funneled cash to terrorists and terrorist groups, why do the Saudis want to get in bed with Israel?
Well, the key phrase, it's very important for people in the West to understand this, is that what you're seeing in the Islamic world is something that happened in the life cycle of the Christian religion about the same age. Islam is a younger religion than Christianity. About the time when Christianity was as old as Islam was during the 30 Years' War, the great wars, during the same civil wars of religion that started in France, nine of them, that Nostradamus tried to forestall in his prophecies, that the death of the king through an accident triggered. And the Islamic world is in a similar conflict between the two major sects of Islam, the Sunni, which is the main sect, and the Shia. So the important thing to understand is Saudis support what we would call terrorists, or they would call Wahhabi jihadists, who are Sunni, fighting, when they're fighting other Muslims, they're fighting Shia. The Shia regime that is running Syria, which Saudis have been funneling weapons and men and materials to the Free Syrian Army to defeat a Shia, a government of the minority Muslims who are also allied with Iran. Iran is in a position because of the catastrophe of invading and occupying Iraq, which was foreseen by Nostradamus very clearly that we would lose. That has created a possibility for influence, the balance of power to swing to Iran, swinging to the Shia away from the Sunnis. So the Saudis, who are the central point of the Sunni power, will work with anyone. Have others fight their wars for them, the Saudi kings, because they are Shia. No, they're Sunni, sorry. The other problem is that the area where all the oil is in Saudi Arabia is the one area in Saudi Arabia that is occupied by a minority of Shia. So it's
crazy, isn't it?
This is the underlying thing that is eating a cancer that's eating and tearing apart the Middle East right now and could very well lead to a precipitous misunderstanding through unrequited confrontation of the trauma of past Holocausts, seeing future Holocausts in the future that really don't exist, but it could actually be created by overreacting. The Jewish communities before World War II silenced many people in the Jewish communities who clearly saw in Europe what was coming, what Hitler was going to do. There have been prophecies, which I have documented, even going back 100 years before, that began foreseeing the rise of Adolf Hitler as this great destroyer of Jews in Europe. These people were silenced by their own community. Say, don't make waves. He'll never do that. And he did. So the overreaction is now to being too aggressive if there's danger. And so what we have right now is something exactly that I said would happen in looking in Nostradamus' astrology in 2007 through 2012, when I have done now 2 editions of Nostradamus, The War with Iran, which is also available on Kindle, Kobo, and Nook tablets at HogueProphecy.com and at those places. This book looks at this. We are right in step with the steps that lead first to a threat of war and then a sudden peace initiative.
This year?
Yeah. 2014 was supposed to be the year that I calculated, and also you can read it in my articles and in my books, that 2014 would be the breath of peace that might succeed. But there are forces on all 3 sides of the major contenders, forces in Israel, forces in America, and forces in Iran, that because of a misinterpretation of their doomsday or apocalyptic prophecies of 3 different religions, Jewish, Christian, and Islamic, they want to see this war happen because it will fulfill, in their twisted understanding of these prophecies, the fulfillment of their salvation through their Messiah. In the case, it's the Jewish Messiah arising, or it is the second coming of Christ for the Christians, or it is the reemergence and reappearance of Al-Mahdi in the Islamic apocalyptic prophecies, who will then lead out of Khorasan, which is the ancient name of Afghanistan, the great black flagged holy warriors, who will march all the way across out of Afghanistan, westward, all the way to Jerusalem. A lot of people in the Middle East are looking at that, even more secular or moderate Islamics, who are saying, wow, you know, it's interesting how things are starting to parallel that line of interpreting. There is messianic fever in 3 nations that could fight this war over Iran, over what will, I predict on the record here, is a spurious amount of evidence that shows Iran has actually got or building nuclear weapons. They're certainly learning how to, but then so the Japanese and the South Koreans and Taiwanese, who are our friends, and we didn't get all excited about that because they were our allies. But this situation, I'm very concerned that Netanyahu is trying to precipitate a situation that will drag the United States into the most calamitous war that has ever been waged in the Middle East, and it could happen as soon as this year, as soon as this spring, or later in the autumn. But I am more of the mind that Nostradamus is, as many times as these warnings have come over the last few years, I feel consistently strong about this sense that looking at his astrology, it's 2015 and 2016 are really the window for this war happening.
Will it be contained, or will it really break out into something big?
Well, I just simply say this, that a lot of you listening tonight are probably thinking, well, that's out in the Middle East, and it's not really going to affect me. It's just something I'll see on CNN and go, oh, pity that. But I am telling you, and listen very carefully, all of you, all around the planet that is listening to this, this war, if it happens, and this war has been described in Nostradamus' prophecies almost in the clear, sometimes directly in the clear, if you understand the geography he's describing, is the 16th century terms for the actual Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz, and the places where this future war could happen. And it is similarly to what happened to the armies of 1914, who blithely marched in their pretty uniforms, shoulder to shoulder, like it was the Napoleonic Wars, into heavy artillery and machine guns, and discovered very quickly and had to dig trenches to react to it, that their tactics were completely not up to the violence of modern warfare. That was one of the shocks they had in 1914. And I tell you, if there is a war in 2014, between Israel, America, and the Gulf states of the Sunni kings and Iran, there's going to be very nasty shocks that are reminiscent of what happened in the guns of August 1914, when the whole world went to war that nobody wanted, and found themselves trapped in the trenches for four bloody years and the death of 30 million people, and a completely changed planet after that happened, politically and economically speaking.
John, let's take a quick look at the Sochi Olympics and give us your thoughts on the possibility of any terrorist strikes there.
When I consulted my oracle for this work, for better want of a better label, what I call what I do, which is really hard to explain in a non-linear, in a linear sense, but what the oracle told me and what I wrote in predictions for 2014 is to look out for the third week of February. That is the time.
Oh, it's coming up.
And it's coming up. That would mean towards the end of the Olympics. It didn't see anything directly in the venues that would happen. But I got a very strong feeling that while everybody's looking and the 100,000 soldiers are ringing the area to keep it secure from terrorists that would come out of the Caucasus Mountains, beware of what happens in Moscow. Beware of what happens in the train and plane and automobile lines of transit that go to and from the Olympics. Because while everybody's looking for something to happen in the Olympics, my strong sense is the terrorist act will happen elsewhere in Russia. That will have just as big an impact in putting cold water on the whole Olympic magic. So I hope I'm wrong, but that is the thing I say to the Russians. Look elsewhere. Don't think that it isn't going to happen in Moscow or somewhere on the way in, like Volgograd again, or other important.
Gosh, I thought we were going to have a nice, easy 2014, John.
We are in a time of upheaval, and history's travail, and ultimately that is going to give birth to something better. But as any mother knows, during the middle of the bearing down for a child, the convulsions and the travails are very frightening and painful. But if one can look at these historical things in a bigger picture, that every mother also knows that it's as excruciating and painful as it is heading towards something wonderful. And sometimes pain and destruction of the old has to happen for the new to come forth. And this is best defined in our times by a series of squares or 90-degree positions of two very important outer planets in astrology, which basically define our times, the kind of the vibe that we live under. And that is Pluto in Capricorn, which entered in 2008, is about the establishment and how the establishment, after a 250-year cycle from one Capricorn transit to another, requires a redesign. That means in the things that Capricorn rules, politics and economy. So this last time we were there, the redesign happened with the American Revolution. It also redesigned the way we look at religion and secular science. That was the age of the Enlightenment with Voltaire and Rousseau and the philosophers and the science actually finally gaining over superstitious religions. That was a redesign of the established views, classic Pluto and Capricorn. In that process, we have entered it again. Actually, back then is when the middle classes as we know them in modern times began. They began in the British colonies in America and in Europe. Now, 250 years later, the people of America and Europe are in a midlife crisis over their definition of middle class and economy, while a new wave of new emergent middle classes are rising in Asia and South America and all over the world in this new cycle. And they, like us in the past, will demand more of their totalitarian regimes, like in China and other places, demand more of their governments. And eventually, if they do not get what they need as they become more free and more educated and more affluent, they will have the season of revolutions that happened in America first and then later in the French Revolution and all the revolutions that raged throughout another 100 years from the 19th century into the 20th century with the Bolshevik, the Chinese, the Nazi Revolution. Better or worse, these come as paroxysms of people, convulsions of history. And this is described in the square of Uranus, another outer planet, with Pluto and Capricorn. Uranus is in Aries. That rules forward progress, new ventures, new enterprises. Or it in because it's squared, which is negative, it means Uranus, which is the ruler of chaos and also humanity and humanitarian things and mass revolutions, is leaderless, clashing in the streets with the establishment, like the occupied Wall Street, like much of the Tea Party movement, lots of ideas, lots of sincere people seeking reform, but no discipline, no focus, no, everybody knows there's a problem. Everybody's got an opinion of what to do, but nobody can unite and put up a common front against the establishment. So the establishment heavy-handedly pepper sprays it down or compromises a good rebellion by buying it, as has often happened in the Tea Party movement, where it was bought by interests that in the name of Tea Party virtues and values are actually going to try to destroy the democracy and actually have been in a creeping coup d'etat to destroy our freedoms in the name of a lot of the Tea Party ideas through Citizens United, which was passed by the Supreme Court, which basically made you, a flesh and blood American citizen, a lesser citizen than a corporation, and money has more free speech than you, as a human citizen of the United States. When I saw that come, I realized, here it comes. The new aristocracy is making its move, just like King George did in the last Pluto and Capricorn transit, to suppress a tax rebellion, like the Tea Party that was called before, that all led to the American Revolution and a lot of good. But it started off as a king suppressing the middle classes over taxes and money. And just now we're having an aristocracy that I call the CE oligarchy that is taking over with its crony capitalism, taking over real capitalism and suppressing the free markets in the name of free markets. And it will eventually lead between now and 2024 to as early as 2020 to 2024, you might actually see another revolution in the United States and in other places, in China and in other places where totalitarian corporations are becoming the new power using politics and politicians as their puppets.
People will basically say what, John? Enough is enough?
Well, eventually what will happen is we have to get out of these squares of Uranus and Pluto, and we won't get out of them. You won't see any clear creation of a disciplined, focused idea, because actually the first Tea Party back in 1772, 73, I think, was also had great ideas, but it was a mob tearing up ships and throwing boxes of tea into the Boston Harbor. And it later gained a voice and it gained a disciplined approach to its protest against what King George was doing, which eventually led to our founding fathers and George Washington and all those people fighting that war. That happened at the end of the transit of Pluto, which ended after 1776.
Hey, John, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. Much more to come. John Hogue with us, Prophecies on Coast to Coast AM.